The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to top people and ideas, presented by U Mobile.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutan, and our guest on the Breakfast Grill today is Her Excellency Mario Castillo Fernandez, Ambassador of the Delegation of the European Union to Malaysia. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Sharad. A pleasure.
I want to begin with the fact that you were based in Brussels at the European External Action Service of the European Union as head of division for India, Nepal, Bhutan and Bangladesh. And you also had prior overseas postings that included official roles in Hong Kong and Macau as head of office and also in Seoul, South Korea. So that's really quite a range of experiences in terms of regions. What is it that you bring to the conversation here in Southeast Asia? What is the EU concerned most of and sees challenges in Southeast Asia?
Well, you said it yourself, I'm an old pair of hands, European hands in Asia. I've done a bit of Asia myself in my career. Certainly, I mean, Asia for us is one of our strongest partners, and we have strategic partners in Asia, being Korea, Japan, China, India. You know, I've been working with at least three of them, so that is important. And then we have ASEAN as a whole, which is also one of our most closest natural partners, and in ASEAN, all the ASEAN countries. So for me to be in Malaysia was, you know, to close a circle. But the idea here for me is to be more engaged with Malaysia and through Malaysia with ASEAN. We need a strong ASEAN in Asia, which will, you know, work together with the European countries, you know, not only to foster trade and economy. This is not only the big dimension of our relations. We do more than that. We are engaged in green economy. We are engaged in climate. We are engaged in environment. We are partners in all our global challenges like migration, like refugees, like counterterrorism, like other security issues. So what I want to say is that when you look at what Europe is doing in Asia and around the world, it's much more than trade. Even we are trade and economic and investment is a very strong pillar of our relation. It's more than that. And it's also about people. It's about bringing European people and Asian people, in this case, ASEAN and Malaysians, together. You know, it's about forcing people-to-people exchanges, because it's only like that that we can address, you know, the challenge of the future, trying to put our people together to get to know more. And, you know, as an old pair of hands in Asia, I am trying to bring Europe more closer to Asian countries and bring Asia more closer to Europe, because there's also a gap on the other side. Yeah.
Of course, we did have a history of colonialism. So we know the Dutch, we know the British, and we know the French quite well in this region. At least there were previous generations that knew them more intimately. But speaking of security, America has provided the security architecture in this region for a long time, is now being challenged by a rising China. How does the European Union view the changing dynamics, both in Southeast Asia around the South China Sea issue, but also largely because you were in South Korea, so the tensions in the Korean Peninsula? Does Europe have a voice in these dynamics?
Well, we do have a voice. You know, we speak more and more Europe as one on security matters. Security matters are global matters. So whatever happens in Asia, even security-wise, has an implication to what is happening in Europe. So, of course, if you take the Korean Peninsula, we are not part of the six-party talks, but we are speaking with all the partners. And we have been, you know, with a big package of humanitarian aid in helping, you know, the inter-Korean process, the humanitarian situation in the north. So certainly, you know, we stand with partners, and we have an important, I think, as a huge 28 countries still together stake in security in what is happening in Asia. Concrete examples, we are very active in Afghanistan. We were active in Aceh at the time. So that is a security linked conflict that we had where Europe was leading. We are
during the time of the Garakhan Aceh Merdeka conflict.
Yes, that's it. Okay. We are also involved in Mindanao in the peace talks. We are a soft security provider. We come with soft solutions. We are trying to work on conflict prevention. We are trying to work also on managing conflicts. So we have a lot to say and to share with partners all around the world. Sometimes you don't hear us, but we are there. One other example, maritime security. What we have been doing in Somalia in the piracy operation, which has managed to stop piracy in that part of the world, which had an implications all over the world because all our ships were passing through that area. And there we have been working with partners like India, the China, Korea, Japan. They were all part of this big operation of counter-piracy. Well, if one day, hope not, but if there is a security issue in the Straits of Malacca or in the South China Sea, you know, there is, we need to work together to resolve, because whatever happens here will have an impact in the whole Europe.
There's a conversation locally about Chinese investments in Malaysia, huge infrastructure investments. And of course, this is a story that's replicated across Asia. You would know China's investments in Sri Lanka, in Bangladesh, in Pakistan, the idea of a string of pearls that China wants to build in terms of ports. Does Europe view China's rise and China's ambitions with trepidation, with concern, or do they welcome China? I mean, where does Europe lie in this conversation about debt diplomacy and such?
Well, China is a very close partner of Europe, and we are engaging and working very closely with China in the issues of the Belt and Silk Road. I mean, it doesn't stop only in Asia. It goes through to Europe. And therefore, you know, the linked, what we are trying is, we are trying to build our own connectivity policy in order to complement what, you know, China and others are doing in this. We are doing a lot on connectivity with ASEAN. So there is, as an example, a transport, horizontal transport negotiations being carried out to try to go not only on open skies, but on transport traffic management, on airport security management, on issues that are beyond a normal transport agreement. So these are concrete things that we are doing here. When it is related to China and connectivity, what we tell China is, you know, in Europe, we want a level playing field. We want transparency. We have clear rules, procurement rules. So everyone has to play in Europe that game. We cannot, you know, we have international standards that we need to apply. So this is, if we want to do connectivity projects in Europe with whatever partner, it has to do on the basis of those standards.
Well, Europe is a strong negotiating position when it comes to China. But what about the smaller countries? When you view countries like Bangladesh and Sri Lanka, and there is a deep concern that China has much more leverage over these countries, and they're taking on deals that will lead them either into debt or indebtedness to China for not just reasons of trade, but for, you know, security, maybe strategic dimensions of that issue. Do you view this with concern, what China is doing with these countries that have much less leverage?
I think we are engaging with countries like Bangladesh and Sri Lanka also at the same time. You know, they need to also feel that there are other players, not only China. We are working with them. We are giving them enormous development assistance to work to make them, you know, sustainable, that their development or economic development is sustainable, that they also, that the country itself can manage and has their own resources. And we are working with civil society there, with governments to try to make them, give them the capacities for them to be, you know, able on their own and not dependent on any partner. So certainly we need to engage with everyone, and we need to complement. I think what countries like this and others want is that they would like to have more partners together involved in their and helping them to, you know, increase their economic development. And therefore, that situation would not be materialized.
I'm speaking to Her Excellency Mario Castillo Fernandez, Ambassador of the Delegation of the European Union to Malaysia. Next up, we speak about the challenges for Europe. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
Good morning. If you just joined us, I'm Sharad Kutan, and our guest on the Breakfast Grill today is Her Excellency Mario Castillo Fernandez, Ambassador The delegation of the European Union to Malaysia. We could come back to Europe. I want to begin with what has been the main story about Europe in recent times, and it's got to do with pressures on the European Union, talk about its disintegration, talk about populist politics, Eurosceptics. That seems to be the story. And we just had the Italian elections on one hand, and we had about pro-European results in France. Beyond that, could you help us understand the dynamics today around European integration? I want to begin with German Chancellor Angela Merkel's recent statement. She said, "The future of Europe is dear to my heart, and that means Europe of 27 member states, not a Europe of the Eurozone or other groups." What does Chancellor Merkel mean by this statement?
What I would say is the dynamic now in Europe, and you asked me that as a first question, is what do we want to be? Do we want to continue as just sharing a single market and not trying to go beyond that? Or do we want to be stronger at 27 because individually each country in the global world that we are today will weigh very little? So the only way to address global challenge, to stick together and to make us stronger, is to be together. And I think that is what Angela Merkel says. Everyone has all the issues that you mentioned in the head, as you know, what is happening to Europe. What is happening? Europe is a peaceful space. We forget where we come from. We forget where we are. 60 years of prosperity, 60 years of peace, 60 years of economic growth. And I think that we give many things for granted today, and we don't think how difficult it has been to achieve. The fact that we have one single space in many of the EU countries where you can just come in, show your passport, but then you can just go from one country to another, move around the country, go and work to a different country. My children are working in the UK, and they are considered as UK citizens. My other son is studying in France, and he is treated like a French, even he is a Spanish Belgium. So this diversity, this mixture of things we can do now in Europe, this was not there when I left Madrid 30 years ago. Now all these things are, we forget it. We forget that we have them. But if you take them all off, where are we going? So Europe is not going back. Europe is going up. We can be doing it slowly, but we are, I think, the moment now is we are reflecting on our leaders, Prime Minister Merkel, President Macron, Prime Minister Rajoy, all the European leaders are now to have discussed what will be the Europe we want.
It brings me to the next question, which has to do with President of France, Emmanuel Macron. He is framed as one of the two important leaders of Europe. The French and the German leadership is seen as essential to European integration, and that's how it's framed in the media. Could you help us understand why France and Germany are seen as the mortars for European integration?
Because they have been there from the beginning. There were six countries at the beginning, but the France and Germany were the biggest countries, were the ones who were fighting as well, because Europe started from a situation of war, of two big wars, millions of Europeans dead. And so they had to put, the enemies had to come together and say, well, we have to work together. We don't want to go back to a situation of war. So they have always been the heart to put France and Germany, the two big countries in Europe who had been in war all this time, together, and to try to say, well, you're going to lead. So that's why from the very beginning, that is the heart, that is the motor of Europe. And those two countries really have to have to come together whenever we want to push big issues in Europe.
So often the media reflects back on the leadership of Helmut Kohl and François Mitterrand as being a very positive period in terms of European integration. Today they're saying that the Germans are holding back in this respect, that Emmanuel Macron has a reform proposal for Europe. He wants to overhaul the Eurozone militarily, even economic and fiscal and trade policies. There are issues of how to deal with debt, for instance, and also he's got an idea about a Eurozone budget and a finance minister. But it's said in the media that Germany is hesitating. Could you explain this dynamics to us?
Well, there is many initiatives, the ones that France is pushing, but there are other countries that are pushing other dynamics as well. I think that, as I said, this moment, EU leaders, and you will see that in every time they meet, they are discussing the future of Europe. What Europe do they want? Because they also discussing what budget do you want? If you want, you need more budget. If you want more Europe,
so is it taking too long? Seems like the reports are saying Emmanuel Macron is impatient. That he's put this proposal 6 months ago. He had to wait for Angela Merkel's coalition to come together. And
well, it's not like that. We are 28 countries, so it's not only France and Germany. Europe is 28 countries still, including the UK until March, 29th of March next year. So it's not only France and Germany. You need to have everyone on board if you want to push big reforms like this one. So you need to find a consensus. Europe is about consensus. So these are initiatives, but there are other countries bringing other initiatives to the table. And the issue will be if you want to go to a more united and more Europe in many issues like this one, you will need to put also more budget. So the issue now comes, and you will, in all the discussions every time they meet, it will be what kind of budget do we want or do we need, and what kind of Europe do we want and do we need, and therefore match resources which with needs. And therefore, I think that is the big issue. It's not about waiting for the Germans to have a coalition. It's these ideas are there. They have been, many of them have been there for quite a while. But you need to find the momentum and the consensus and the political will of all European leaders to move them forward.
Is it fair to say that the German taxpayer will often pay the burden of proposals that? It's, at least in the reports, are suggesting that in terms of the way debt is structured in Europe, that it's the German taxpayer that often loses out when debts are pooled or there's a mutualizing, as they say, of debt. Is that would be a fair statement?
No, I think that would be a very simple statement. I think Europe is built also on a principle of solidarity. Because without that, we don't have prosperity. And that means that the rich regions are helping the poor regions. And that has always been the case. When Spain started in 82, we received a lot of funds from other European countries to help Spain and Portugal and Greece developed. Now we are helping the Eastern European countries to develop. So it is a shared responsibility and a shared solidarity. And otherwise, we cannot move ahead if this principle of solidarity is not there. But it's not. It's very simple to say that. I think every country contributes to the EU budget on the basis of criteria which have been agreed, which have to do with population and have to do with GDP, 2% of GDP. So, and then all the money that comes from every country is redistributed to the policies and to the actions and programs that have been agreed by the 28. So I think it's also, we have to say that here the agreements and the laws are made by the countries itself. It's not by a bureaucratic body or by bureaucrats in like myself in Brussels or abroad. It is, you know, all of this is done on the basis of consensus, on the basis of putting as much as possible EU countries together. But the decisions are done by the EU countries who want to move together in solidarity, share the burden that Europe has today.
Is one of the biggest challenges for Europe is that it's made up of democratic countries and that the democratic will might pull countries in different directions depending on the time and place. Is that a major challenge? I mean, do leaders in Europe see democracy as somehow holding them back?
Democracy is our biggest asset. It's our biggest asset. Democracy is what we stand for. We stand for democracy and we stand for fundamental principles and rights. And this is the basis of what we are doing. It's not something that holds us back. Of course, there is in all democracy. We have to accept, you know, what the majority decides. But that's democracy. Then there will be other times which will be the opposite. So, but if we, that's our key, rule of law, democracy, fundamental rights, that are the values and the pillars of what is Europe today. And I think we all agree that we need to stand. If we don't have this, there won't be any more Europe.
I don't want to open a can of worms, but since you are from Spain, I want to ask you about the Catalan issue. That was a spectacle for a lot of us outside of Europe, watching Europe deal with this. And it seemed a difficult one because it seemed like a lot of democratic countries acting rather heavy-handed, and the Spanish government in particular, against the Catalan separatists. Could you just give us a sense of what that signal about where Europe is going?
I am a truly European, so what it signals is that Europe, and I go back to your previous question, we have to uphold the rule of law, our laws, our constitutions, our democratic values. And if we don't uphold our rule of law and our laws and constitutions, then, you know, Europe will not be any more Europe. And these are the values where we stand for, and it applies to everything. Also in the Catalonian context. So we have a law, we have a constitution that has to be applied, and they are for everyone to implement.
And you felt they were applied fairly?
They are applied. We have separation of powers in all European countries. You have courts and which are completely independent from legislative and from governments, and I think that is the basis of how we stand on the societies we have built, and we need to defend those values. Otherwise, there won't be any more Europe.
Thank you very much for your insights.
Thank you. Thank you.
I've been speaking to Excellency Maria Castillo Fernandez, Ambassador of the Delegation of the European Union to Malaysia. I'm Sharad Kutan, and you've been listening to The Breakfast Grill on BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
That episode of BFM Breakfast Grill was brought to you by U-Mobile, where data hearts you.